intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday. Finally, it's Monday and it's March 18th. Until after 11 o'clock in the morning, once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for the day. I'm deliberating with Aaron now, wondering if I should have an open line on Monday, right? I want to talk about the Haitian issues, but Aaron did a good job on the other show. And I said, but there's so much other things in the news that I want to talk about. I see the Attorney General, one of our better Attorney Generals, right, mentioned that juries is a constitutional right, right? And he did that in response to a critique, a consideration on whether jury trials are obsolete in the Bahamas. I want to talk about that. Every year, published inside of newspapers is a list of Bahamians. I need to mention that I have Mr. Williams coming in today, right?
David Williams.
So I'm expecting him and he should come up shortly. And when he comes up, I'll stop and do that brief interview with him because, you know, we're promoting men's opportunity and upliftment and stuff like that. So I just want to make sure he's supposed to come in today. And I want to mention to my listening audience that I expect that interruption too. But I'll go back to the jury trial, right? Mm-hmm. Every year we publish a jury list, and every year Bahamians duck being on the jury. They say they're busy. They say they don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. They ain't interested in being a jury at all. A juror at all, right? There are some people who are requesting that we have perhaps professional jurors, people who are trained, who have time, who are like a group of 50 to a group of 100, group of 200 people in our society
Suggesting that?
Yeah, man. Ooh, have a professional jurors.
When you say that, is that sort of a suggestion that arose in a common man's space?
Common man's space.
Or are the members of the legal community that are suggesting
I'm
going to
bring him into the conversation because I know they had a few chief justices had commentary about our general laws. And I want you to read that article and also point out from one of the chief justices, who are one of my distant cousins, Barnett, right? He made a statement, and which, again, the Attorney General had responded in kind to correct or to remind us about it. So I want to read his point, then read the Attorney General's point, and then have the listening audience consider that too. Moving forward, the new Bahamas, the better Bahamas, as we make, like I said, the making of the Bahamas, things for us to concentrate and consider. That's what I want to do right now. And then we go back to talking about the Haitians again.
Okay.
Go ahead. You have that article or what at least would...
Absolutely. So there are four articles in question. We start with Friday's newspaper's use of juries need review, says Court of Appeal President. That's a Tribune. In The Guardian, we don't aim to put society at risk. In today's Tribune, AG plays down prospect of referendum on juries. And in today's Guardian, the Bahamas in minority of countries with jury trials. We start with use of juries needs review, says Court of Appeal President. Court of Appeal President Sir Michael Barnett said the judicial system should be reviewed to determine whether jury trials should be reduced or eliminated. He and other prominent former and current judges highlighted issues with jury trials last night, so that would have been Thursday the 14th, at the Eugene Depuch Distinguished Lectures 25th anniversary. So Michael said, quote, suppose you have a complex fraud case, a jury of seven persons of humble origins may not be able to fully grasp the complications of a fraud case involving commercial fraud, etc. I'm not sure that's the best way of adjudicating that kind of dispute. We do not need to take a clinical view as to whether or not there are ways in which we can, in fact, reform the criminal justice system and reduce, if not eliminate, the number of trials by jurors and risk involving that. The Attorney General...
See, why would I say a pool of professional jurors?
No.
No?
It doesn't work like that.
Especially if they cannot appreciate the complexities of a particular cases?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that this is a lecture and not statements emanating from the court, because we can actually critique them. I get concerned when I hear the words, persons of humble origins may not be able to fully grasp the complications of a fraud case. I'll start here and say that perhaps that's not what the learned justice meant to say.
What
right?
do you mean to say that?
Because Prime Minister Davis loves to tell us how he's from humble beginnings. Ingram, Christie, they all took delight in telling us as much as possible how they arose from humble beginnings. Is the learned justice suggesting that people who came into the world in a state of poverty don't have the capacity to understand things or to improve their educational groundings? And why would we just believe that poor people are inherently stupid and they need to be educated?
I don't believe
to be sensible
he
members
meant
of
economics. I think he was considering of education and exposure, complex issues.
Like I said, I started off by saying I believe that he misspoke, that those were not the words
he intended to use,
right? Okay. But the response to that, your belief that many of your citizens are unable to participate in a jury system because their education or their intellectual capacity is so weak, right? As opposed to saying we should potentially eradicate jury trials, has anybody stopped to think, well, maybe we should focus seriously on improving the educational system because now it's impacting our ability to adjudicate cases and provide justice for people? I'm just saying, before I would take away a fundamental constitutional right, I would consider whether in any way I could improve the education system.
We've been talking about improving the education system for a while.
Yeah, but we haven't ever linked it to potentially needing to bastardize our system of governance, right? Like, we never linked the two, although I have attempted to link, and that's another conversation. The point is, I'm troubled greatly when a learned justice mm-hmm. would misspeak in such a way. I would hope that he did not intend to convey what his words actually convey, because the entire country is run by people from humble beginnings. Mm. That's the first thing they put on the manifesto. I was poor like you once, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it can't be that limits educational capacity.
No problem. I'll give you that. What's the next article? How did the next article go?
We don't aim to put society at risk. Three former chief justices and the Bahamas and current chief justice last night rejected claims often put forth by some members of the public that judges are recklessly putting society at risk by granting bail to criminals. I'm going to continue from here. The controversial issue of bail featured prominently during the Eugene Deputch Distinguished Lecture held at Bahama. It was called Justices in Dialogue, Distinguished Conversations. Chief Justice Sir Ian Winder and former Chief Justices Sir Michael Barnett, who is currently President of the Court Appeal, Sir Brian Morey and Sir Burton Hall were the panelists. Asked by moderator journalist Jerome Sawyer to address the bail issue and public concern that criminals are being released on bail, and I'm going to segue further into the article, Sir Brian, who served as Chief Justice from 2019 to 2022, noted the presumption of innocence is more than a slogan. Quote, this is an essential reality for a democratic society. So if you start off the debate by saying, why are judges letting these criminals out on bail? Right there, that's not going to go anywhere, because the fact of the matter is the so-called criminal is entitled to a presumption of innocence and the court must regard the person in that way. So the mere fact that you are arrested does not mean that you ought to be treated as a convict. And there are the constitutional issues that have to be a concern for the judge. And so there's a far more disciplined and analytical approach that has to be taken towards bail. Close quotes.
Okay. I know the Commissioner of Police ain't happy with this statement. But anyway, let's go to the caller here. Producer, pass the caller through for me, please. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
When they say you came from humble beginnings, simply ask them how much laws you broke to get where you are now.
What?
And I'll pick that.
We're known for turning pirates into privateers. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning. You know, but Aaron, for your previous show, you know, you can go at a gun show in South Florida, and with $500, you could buy a weapon and sell it for $10,000 in Haiti, right? Mm-hmm. You can get, you could buy a Kia Coke in Haiti for like $15,000 and sell it in Florida for $30,000. So there seems to be a Haitian, American, Canadian criminal cartel that you'll be up against if you try to stop that.
Okay, so you're saying that there is a criminal element that benefits from the chaos that currently exists in Haiti right now?
Well, you know, if the guy who invented a vehicle that could run off water, you know, they got rid of him. Now I have Toyota coming out with it.
And for those who say now, Aaron, you got to tread carefully. All we're saying is that every person that has created a car that can be run off of water has mysteriously died. We don't know how. We don't know why. We just know that they dead.
Yeah, but look, it's a package of conspiracy theories. You know, but look here, the jury versus the judge.
Yes.
Why didn't they have on that panel of at least item to discuss? How could I prevent you from coming before the jury and the judge? That shows that you're concerned about me and not a part of this banking system called the court, where the actual general manager of the bank is the judge and the tellers, well, you know, they represent the prosecutors. That's the system we have inherited. They don't want to talk about getting you out of not coming to prison or to jail. They want you to come because that's when you have to bring money to support them who dress in robe and white. Them. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. I want to read just quickly from the article, "We Don't Aim to Put Society at Risk." The panelists also addressed a number of other issues impacting the judiciary, including whether jury trials should be abandoned, which we addressed in the prior article, whether the courts play a role in driving social change. And I think that is the space in which you desire to hear discourse, sir, whether the courts play a role in driving social change and the evolving role of technology in the administration of justice. Mr. Nuri, there's also a really interesting article in today's paper, "Government Plans to Use AI Tools in the Future."
I don't want to talk about that, Aaron.
I'm just saying.
That don't make no sense.
I'm just saying that we
could barely have the lights on.
If we could get a copy of the lecture, I'm hoping that it was recorded for the purpose of disseminating it, we could see the extent to which the conversation that the judges had leads into this headline, "Government Planning on Using AI."
Anyway, my guest is here, but I'm going to get to this caller here and then have Dave Williams from his men group explain why he is here, what's happening, what's trending. But let's talk to this caller first, and then we'll speak to Dave right after that. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning, CA and Aaron.
Morning.
I believe our whole judiciary system needs to be scrapped, because who issue your bench warrant to go through to be arrested on a capital case? See, in the States, the police have to go to the prosecutor office to see what's the evidence. Do you have film? Do you have witnesses? Before they take away your rights, somebody who's been in law school has to look at your case and say, yes, arrest him. Have you ever watched Law and Order? Where the police have to, police and prosecutor work together. The police cannot come and arrest you because they feel like it. They have to have evidence, film, DNA, fingerprints. Then the prosecutor say, arrest him. That's what I'm right. They say, we have JP signing arrest warrants. Take away your rights. So I believe because in the States you don't get on a murder charge, you don't get bail. If it's bail, it's $1 million. Because we people been arrested on police feel like you did the crime, but then they do the homework and see if they have evidence and witnesses match. That's why some people get 3 or 4 bail because the judge feel like no evidence is there.
Yes, sir.
Do you know here, if there's warrant, who issues the warrant for your arrest on a capital case?
Tell me.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't see that. To me, that's why it takes so long to do a murder case. The police and the prosecutors ain't working together.
It's a question to be asked. It's a question to be asked.
I feel like they arrest you first, that and what the VBI. Then after you arrest it, the prosecutor has to go make up the case. That takes too long. You could be doing your freedom while they bring the case against you. That's why the states, when they indict you, the feds indict you, you finish. It takes them 2-3 years of following you, where you've been, doing all that violence. Then they kick your door down 5 in the morning.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Mr. Williams.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Morning to you. Morning to my good friend.
Pull the mic a little closer to you there.
Okay.
And welcome again. It's always good to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure that both of you always take the time to give me an opportunity to share. I appreciate that.
Go ahead. What's happening?
Well, what's happening is, you know, today, well, as a matter of fact, in a number of groups, as you know, I'm always a part of men and boys group. But it's the grip is Apostle Henry Higgins. Gang reduction, intervention, and prevention. We have partnered with the International Men's Day organization, Bahamas. We've partnered with the Brotherhood, that's led by Dr. Carlos Reed. Keith Cox is president of International Men's Day, President Anthony Sands, Reverend Anthony Sands, President Fellowship, myself, Uplifting Men's Ministry, and numerous, you have Pastor Randy Hanna from the National Neighborhood Watch Council for East Street. We have Pastor Kingsley Pinder, Apostle Leroy Butler. But we have numerous men coming together from different organizations. And we sat down in our initial meeting and we decided, how do we reach our men? Our men need a safe space to talk. And we've talked about it on this radio before. And so what we decided is that what we're going to have, we got permission from Pastor Nathan Wells from the Chapel on the Hill. He has a youth center where we can have a space where men can come out together. And I want to say, first of all, it's not a church event, so I don't want anybody to feel intimidated. But what the space is, we began last week, where men came out. We had a speaker, Apostle Henry Higgins, spoke. He shared on a topic, only 15, 20 minutes. And then we sit down and we play dominoes, chess, checkers, and just have a conversation about men issues. We also had pizza, you know, light snacks and drinks. And so tonight it so happened that I'm the speaker for tonight. And my topic, first I want to speak from my own personal experience. Because when I see people and they always tell me, boy, every time I see you, you're here, and you're going, and where you got this whole passion for men and boys. And so I want to say to them that was born out of my own personal experience in the past. Because I've been involved in men's ministry for over 20 plus years. And even now. And so my topic tonight is when men hurt, right? Does men hurt? How do we address men who go through hurt? The idea behind the forum is to have men 18 years and older.
You say men's hurt?
Yeah, men go through hurt and pain. I say a lot when we talk about the gender-based violence and women suffering in silence, right? But men go through the same thing. Like I say, I'm going to share a little of my own personal testimony, right? But And I encounter, because after, as you know, I've been involved in the prison itself just for 20 years. And so just so I sit down and talk with you, I sit down and get to talk with men who have done some things. And the information that they share, right? And I'm not talking about the crime. I'm talking about the things that they go through. It blows our mind. It stuns us. And the thing about it, we realize that as we meet. And we talk about, we had a mentoring program the other day about trying to identify men to now mentor boys. But I realized before we go through that, we all agree that we need, as men, we need to make sure to do what it takes for ourselves individually. I want to share some things. I just came from a building just now, and I was very disturbed because the young man, 9th grader, and I know I'm saying this publicly, and I said, why are you not in school? Last week was the same thing. So I made a commitment that I'm going to reach out to his mother today. That's, we're talking to 9th grade. And then another neighbor called me and said, you know so-and-so, another young man. And she said, he was out on the road naked. I said, what? They believe he was laced with drugs, right? So we got to reach our boys. One of the things I look at, the doctor, Minister Darvill said, 70% of the children born in this country to single-parent home. This is why, for me, my focus is the men. I have been at the boys and girls school now through Prison Fellowship Bahamas, along with my Uplifting Men's Ministry. And the last time I actually did a survey, 65% of the boys raised their hands. They didn't grow up without a father. Now, I must say to you, my classes, what we have every Friday, one of the things, this is disturbing me now too, is that for this season, for this year, I've had classes of about 20 females in my years going up there that never happened. There was only, I think the maximum I ever had in a class was maybe 6 to 7 girls, right? But like I say, for this year, since January, I've counted 20. That tells me that there's a challenge. Then I always refer to, this has been what has really, and this was done many years ago, and I know it hasn't changed. When in maximum, I had 100 persons in my class, and when I did the survey, and you've heard me say it, you know, I sometimes hate to repeat it, but people say that, ask it. When 80 of those 100 men raised their hand, they grew up without a father. So sometimes men will say, and I just was sharing this somewhere, I can't remember last night, oh, well, I did well and I didn't. Yes, I grew up in a single parent home too, and I did well too. But the facts still remain, there's a problem with many of us as men. We are missing. And so what we're seeking to do is have men talk tonight, 6:30, right? We want men to come into this space to sit down. Aaron, I've always invited you to events, but this one, I can't invite you this one, okay? I invite C.A. Nui. Because we want men to come, and we want them to... I mean, if a woman come, a female come...
No, she can't come. Don't change it.
No, but I'm saying if women show up tonight, we're not going to say, oh, this is a man thing and you can't come. But we just want men to know, feel free to share and get advice from other men. Hey, I've been through this. I'll say this last thing. With the brotherhood with Dr. Carlos Reed, we were in a space having a meeting. And we were talking about dealing with this gang violence. And then a gentleman got up, one of the same persons, and he began to express some of the challenges he was facing in his marriage. That meeting took a complete shift. Because here it is, he's walking the streets every day with us, talking to young men, addressing, you understand me? Talking to them about a better way. And he's a former gang person too. And he is sharing with them, look, you know, this is not the way to go and all of that. But here it is, he walking with us and he heightened. But what it did, when he said that, it was a trigger. He had about 2 other men to the point where one of them actually tears came out of his eyes. And he began to say, man, boy, in my house, I going through this too. And then we had another person who was able to say, hey, well, you know, I've been married for 30 plus years and I can share with you mine is good per se, but I can share with you when we had the rough times. So I'm only saying that to say this would be needed, the space where men can sit down, talk, and share out of their hurt and their experience. I just want to leave it like that. I know somebody at 1 year wanted to come and say something.
Time, place, all of that again.
So it's 6:30 this afternoon, Chapel on the Hill. Now, one of the things we want to look at a space outside of a church. Because I realize for some people, they're intimidated by church, and it's not a Christian event. That's the first thing I want to say. So we're not seeking to get you to join a church. What we want is men come together in this space and to talk and to share your hurt. And I'm willing, right? I was thinking about whether I should do it on a Facebook Live, right? But I say I'm still praying on it, so I'm going to see what happened tonight, right? But I'm going to share my own, a part of my story and my experience, and I'm hoping other men can be vulnerable to say, hey, this is my story. This is how I got through it, how I got over. And when somebody else shares, someone would say, well, you know what? I'm going through this too. Or I might not have gone through that, but I went through this. And what it does, it helps. It's a healing cycle. It helps the healing. And I want men all over Nassau to come out, cost you nothing. We will provide the refreshments. And let's sit down and talk and share the hurt. Do men hurt? That's the big question. And if they do, how can they start the healing process? How can they get the help process?
And before you go, you believe that Bohemian Men wants to share, desire to share their story?
To answer you, it is not something that happens every day. And I believe this is a part of the reason why we have the problems and the challenges. Because in a group I was in, and they were sharing the information back and forth last night, and someone said, oh, they go in the bars and whatever, right? And they talk, because men talk in the bars and the barber shops and all of that, right? And this is why we want to create the space, the various organizations coming together, so men can share and feel safe, right? We agree, nothing is 100%. And maybe that's why, no, we should not have no Facebook, right? Right. But what we want is men to feel comfortable, to sit down, to talk, and to share, right? That's the space. So yes, man is not known for that. Women talk more frequently. and more with other women. And we're hoping that this could at least be the catalyst that starts the change. The narrative could be, let's talk.
Good. We're going to take a break now. I appreciate it. And remind me of the places. I know everyone to come, so that's why I keep wanting you to remind.
Okay.
You're going to be the keynote speaker
for tonight. Yes, for tonight. 6:30, Chapel on the Hill. 6:30, Chapel on the Hill. That's right off the Tanique Williams Darling Highway in the back of the party place. It's a youth center. It's not in the church. They have like a youth center. We have the dummy nose. We have the backgammon. We have the chess. We have the pizza. We have the sandwich, the chips, the drinks. Of course, soft drinks. We're inviting you to come out and be a part of it.
Good. That's Dave Williams. What's the name of your organization again, Dave?
Well, GRIP really sponsored it, but they're partnering with the Brotherhood, my ministry, Uplifting Men's Ministry, Prison Fellowship Bahamas, Pastor Randy Hanna, Leroy Butler, Kingsley Pender, numerous various men's groups who are part of that organization coming together, all of us. So it is not churchy, no denomination. It's men coming together in a space. We invite the Rastas, Israel United in Christ. We're inviting everybody as men. Sit down and let's talk.
Good. Let's talk tonight. 6:30 tonight. Chapel on the Hill. And we're going to take a quick break here. And then Aaron and I will continue our conversation on what's trending inside the news. That was Dave Williams. And this is Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We will be right back.
Wait, why you look so mashed up? Like clothes at the washer?
No, but just a hard day. Wait.
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Croc Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Easter is right around the corner, and the Nassau Guardian is part partnering with the Easter Bunny to give something special to you. Would you like to give your child an Easter basket filled to the brim with chocolate bunnies, surprise eggs, gift certificates, and more? Then you should enter your child into the Nassau Guardians Easter Coloring Contest. There are three different categories, 5 to 6, 7 to 9, and 10 to 13. Deadline for entry is Friday, March 27th at 4 p.m. Purchase your copy of the Nassau Guardian to get your Easter Coloring Contest sign-up form. And let your children color away and win one of three baskets filled to the brim with Easter goodies from the Nassau Guardian. The Nassau Guardian's Easter Coloring Contest. For more information, call 302-2370.
Well done, Easter Bunnies. Good job. Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Did you know the bacteria that causes TB can live in your body without making you sick? This is called latent TB infection. People with strong immune systems can live with no symptoms of TB, have a normal chest x-ray, and not infect others. However, if the immune system becomes weakened, then latent TB may turn into active TB and can make you and the people around you very sick. If you or someone you know begins to experience coughing that lasts 3 weeks or longer, coughing up blood, weight loss, night sweats, pain in the chest, weakness or tiredness, chills or fever, contact your healthcare provider or the Ministry of Health's Tuberculosis Surveillance Unit at 502-4728 or 502-4803 immediately. These are signs that latent TB may have become active TB. Tuberculosis is preventable and curable. The clock is ticking. Let's end TB.
This message brought to you by the Ministry of Health and Wellness and this station.
Friday, April 5th, get ready for another exciting Fish Fry Friday.
We got to sleep, we got to rest.
At Margaritaville, downtown Nassau, featuring the big band Visage and DJ Beat with the latest in soca, Bahamian, and old school jazz.
Everybody take a drink. Come to party, I like y'all, don't want no man.
Ready to
$5 general admission, $55 buffet and party.
Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Party until 11:30 p.m. That's April 5th, Fish Fry Friday. The stage has been moved, so you've got more dancing space.
This Friday, April 5th, at Margaritaville, downtown Nassau.
Parking at the Point for only $10. See you at Fish Fry Friday, April 5th, with the Big Band Visage.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri. We're continuing our show today on what is trending. It's now 11:39. And I know on Aaron's show, On the Clock, we were talking a little bit about Haiti. And I get a text. Good morning, Mr. Nuri and Sister Green. Haitians never took over any RBDF ships. It was Hondurans. They seized their own fishing boat with three RBDF boarding party. That's a whole different scenario. That's when they kidnap Defense Force officers to take them all the way to Honduras and we're negotiating to get back. I was talking about when we were dropping off immigrants back to Haiti on the boat. And people said they ain't going no place. And they took the, anyway, that's someone from the Robert Hams Defense Force or a former member need to call and text and mention that story, because half of these stories we tend not to know. Not even the one with the Honduran issue. It's not public. Just these things happen.
Only that which is politically expedient makes it to the surface, Mr. Nuri.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just concerned that we're going into a war zone, right, with gangs delivering 100, 200 Haitians or migrants, in this case, who don't want to be returned. And the Defense Force boat have, what, 25 people? Right, you know what could happen far from home, and what if you have to use lethal force to protect yourself? That doesn't end well.
No.
Wait till things settle down. In fact, I believe that our government, the Minister of Immigration, the Director of Immigration, needs to declare to their membership, we are not restraining, whatever that is. When you stop them on the street, what do you call that?
Interdicting?
Yeah.
Detaining.
Interdicting mission, maybe. Anyway, we're not stopping migrants. We're not putting them inside a detention center. We're just putting those people we find on the high seas in the detention center. And hopefully we don't do that for a long period of time. Because, like, imagine keeping them there for a year.
Imagine sending them back to a country that's so unstable that you yourself, i.e. the government, say that it requires external support. You could imagine if the Bahamas devolved to a place where some foreign country says that we need foreigners to come in and stabilize the Bahamas.
Well, we need to make up our mind what we want to do. And we have a migrant problem. We know where the migrants are coming from, but I am uneasy of deporting anyone into a violent situation. Right.
And I know we have a caller, just to throw on the table before you go to the caller. Kenya said that they would lead this charge.
They said they're doing it no more.
And then they had a constitutional challenge in Kenya. The question was asked, does the constitution permit this type of deployment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kenya said, well, it's not a war. War has not been declared, so their military can't go. I think they're in the process of negotiating whether or determining whether police officers can go. The question I have before we go to the caller is, has anyone offered a constitutional challenge or a review to determine whether we are breaching the Constitution by deploying these officers in this manner?
Well, we found out from the Minister of National Security that there will be Marine forces. Technically, they'll be doing what they're doing now, which is policing our borders, I guess, or in international waters, I assume.
Right. Then the question, will they be in Bahamian waters? Will they be in international waters? Or will they be in Haitian, Hispaniola?
And I noticed that no one has informed the public on how many boats we have down there.
Well, actually, I think there is something.
How many boats?
You don't go to the caller first?
Yeah, we're going to the caller. But whilst you're looking, how many boats in total? I know we just said we have boats, but that's just half the news, man. You got to tell me how much boats, the name of the boats, who's the captain. These are information I would like to know.
All right, here
How
we go.
How many troops, Daniel?
From the statement.
No, let's go to call first, then you read.
Okay.
Because I was holding for a while. Go ahead, Callie. Can you hear me?
Hey, good morning, Mr. Neary. Good morning, Aaron Cuz. How are you?
Good. How you do?
Fine, thank you. I have a question. The boats that they are catching now, the defense force are catching now, why are they bringing those persons back here? I mean, shouldn't they just allow them in and follow them or whatever? But why bringing them here? Why not just carry them back from where they need them? Because eventually, at this rate, the detention cell is going to be overcrowded. And like they say, they don't know which in that bunch is from the prison break. So why bring them here versus just carry them back from where they need them?
I think there was a time we tried to tow one of those boats before, and the boat capsized, and scores of people died, or a few people died. We have a duty of care for anyone in our care. Right? So imagine you returned the boat around and did not secure the boat in terms of having food and water there, making sure the boat is not have leaks and flooded and some kind of tragic event happen. We have to control the situation, and we can't afford any international fiasco. We say, well, we didn't do our duty of care to make sure that the people who we are trying to protect and help did not hurt themselves.
Understand that. Okay, now, in terms of them saying that they can fix it, right? I don't want no outside help. I don't see them fixing that without outside help, because it seems like I'm sorry to say it, but it seems like, you know, the only drums that beat in Haiti from I know myself for the past 50-odd years is war drums. You know, even if it's only internal, it's still war drums. To see them fixing that without help. I mean, come on. International, and then they, like, everybody like to say, oh, it's this one's fault, it's that one's fault. How long will you sit down and blame the next man for your problem?
You know, have you, cousin,
you
have you...
try your best to work it out?
Cousin...
find ways to override that?
Cousin, have you ever read the book, The Black Jacobins? Jacobins.
No,
you know, British, I won't change it up.
It was written by a Haitian gentleman who was called Resurrect.
No, it was written by C.L.R. James, right?
I forget.
Yeah, I think it's written by C.L.R. James. In that book and in many books, they will tell the story of how Haitian rebels, revolutionaries, Haitian citizens, Haitian people, they outmaneuvered the Spanish, the French, the Portuguese, the British, the Americans by playing them against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't think it's fair to say that they cannot solve their problems without outside help. I think we can qualify that, right? With using history to provide context.
Didn't the history prove that it was still war in order for them to get to where they were?
No, what the history proves is that even though Haiti was able to free itself and rid itself of oppressors hundreds of years ago, those mm-hmm. same oppressors have possibly committed themselves to taking Haiti back and have been working actively over the last few hundred years to return Haiti to their hands. So that's why I admonish...
But every time we look at it, we don't see... See, for me, on the outside looking in, I don't see these international hands at play. You are there, they are there on the ground. They can see. So if they keep saying we can fix this, then why... And for those who know about the outside help and those who are fighting to work it out themselves, why can't they, all of them, come together and see one thing? This is what I was telling somebody on the show last week. I said, everybody, Mr. Barbecue, is not the fan of everybody. So once Mr. Barbecue gets what he is trying to achieve, there will be war against them. So there will always be war against one or the other. So even if Haitians try to fix it themselves, I don't see it being done. As long as they've been battling, it seems like battle is all they know. I'm sorry, but that's how I'm on the
It's definitely not going to be a quick fix. It's not going to be a quick fix. It's a long haul. It's going to put some shoulders to the wheel and some heavy lifting.
And they now need to say, hold on, if we don't want no outside help, stand up and talk to the people and say, okay, this is how we want to do it moving forward, knowing that, yes, it's going to be some pushback, but I'm assuming most of them will be for that.
But I want to make this point.
It seems like everything they want to do, they started off by war. And they didn't know nothing else until the war simmers down. And then they, whatever they want again, they started off by war. That's how I see it.
Thank you. I want to make this point. It's only Port of Prince that is under siege, you know. The rest of the country is doing pretty well. They have tourism. They have business.
If you check the ones that are leaving, they're not from Port of Prince.
Ms. Nurito, pause. But Carlo, pause for a second. Pause. I just want to interrogate what... And thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much for the call. Mr. Nuri, here's what I'm saying. How could, on one side of the island, the Prime Minister couldn't come back into the country, right? Mm-hmm. The airport is shut down, right? We're sending troops to blockade. How could the rest of the country be fine? If the rest of the country was fine, wouldn't Henry have landed at another airport?
The cruise ship still landed.
Right? I mean... Could he not have...
One would assume so, but someone is spinning a narrative, and that what you're saying does not fit into the narrative.
I mean, I think the narrative doesn't fit into the reality that many people are seeing and experiencing.
Where are the cruise ships docking? The cruise ships are still going, Aaron. Where are they docking? They still have tourism. Commerce is still happening. They go to church of God someplace.
So what an important point. I know we're almost out of time. What an important point to make, that as long as the economy is running, as long as investors are making money, everything is fine. But how could that be so if your prime minister said, look, I go resign. I couldn't enter the country. I was in Puerto Rico. I couldn't enter the country. Canada, the U.S., France, Germany, Sweden, Norway, the United States of America, Britain, UK, all of these people couldn't figure out how to get Henry into the country, but the cruise ships could figure out how to get into the country?
Someone put it in a story. Let's go to the caller stem here as our last few minutes. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
And then I get back to the question you asked me before the caller.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Three very quick questions here. First and foremost, we all understand that section of Haiti is in peril. How big is, I'm pretty sure with all the parishes or whatever it is that they call them, the districts. I think that's what Luby called them. I'm pretty sure that they have police forces in all of these districts. We're not hearing whether those police forces in the many districts are coming together to help quell this problem that is in Port-au-Prince. That's the first thing. The second thing is, does Haiti have a marine division of their law enforcement where it applies to ensuring that these vessels leaving their ports are being investigated to find out who's on these boats and their destination? And my third point here very quickly is, sad to say this, but it reminds me, I give the analogy of Iraq and Iran. You know, all of those war. I mean, how are you going to bring peace to these persons who only know war? You don't think that after you try to broker a deal to bring peace, that war is going to break up again sometime in the not too distant future? These things we have to look at. And lastly, you know, we are attempting to resource our people there to help in this quest. When our own country is at peril, we're trying to guard our borders. I mean, how can we go out and help other people when we can't even hardly help ourselves in this regard? But thanks for taking my call. That's just four things to consider here.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And I need to say that we still need help.
Well, listen, I was in Ireland in 1998, Easter weekend, when the peace deal, when the truce was solidified, when the peace deal was signed. It's possible. It's possible. Right? The second thing is this. Are you saying to me then, Nuri, that as long as Haiti, the economic vehicle, is working and money is being made, then there's no real crisis in Haiti? Because,
I'm not saying that.
Because how could a country that the international community has declared is in utter chaos, the rule of law has collapsed, law and order has collapsed to the point where we've encouraged this interim prime minister to resign for the sake of quelling violence in the country, but international cruise ships are still landing in Haiti. Then what we're saying is, as long as a Caribbean country's economic mechanism is still is still pumping money out. We don't care about the status of the country, rule of law, the safety of its citizens.
And that's all a part of it. But remember when they said the Bahamas was destroyed, when they had Dorian, right? And it was Abaco, right? And we were trying to explain to them, the Bahamas has 700 islands. We have about 25 islands, and the capital is still there. The same way that they have Port-au-Prince is the place under siege, someone needs to tell the narrative about the other parishes or the other settlements on that island. Is it that bad?
I'm glad you said that, Mr. Newry, because I was about to ask Bahamians if they see the similarity, right? If they see the similarity is in what is being revealed in Haiti and what we're experiencing in the Bahamas, right? That once the economic model is fine, once investors have confidence that they could continue making money, there's nothing to see here. We concern ourselves not with the people, for the country is a plantation and not a nation. So we don't need to concern ourselves with them. And do Bahamians see the same thing taking root in their own country? Because surely Dorian impacted the entire Bahamas. The entire Bahamas is still living through the consequences, right? The aftermath of Dorian. We're all still paying the same taxes, right? And so I think that that narrative is extremely dangerous, and I hope that we don't ever see it come to fruition in the Bahamas. Lovely plantation that it is.
Let's take this caller right here again, okay? Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. Could I speak to Mr. Newry? I think he's on air now.
I am on air still.
It's his show, sir.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Mr. Newry, this is George Wilson.
How you doing, Mr. Wilson?
I'm fairly well. Look here, The Guardian published an op-ed from me on Friday.
Right. Somebody was directing me to the Tribune. I guess that's why I couldn't find it.
Right. It's in the Tribune, but it also was in the Guardian.
Okay.
On the dilemma for it was in the Guardian and the Tribune the same day.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad you got directed to it.
Yes, sir.
Because it is, I have proposed a situation for us in the Bahamas in this catastrophe that's developing. It would be good if Bahamians discuss this, because our two boats can't stop when they come out of Haiti.
Yes, sir.
But I'm listening, but you can continue with that, please. And look at the article. It was in The Guardian
on Friday.
Friday morning.
And bring it in, and we'll bring it into the conversation as we continue it.
I just got a text.
Okay, I will listen to you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
I guess I got a text here letting me know that a cruise line suspends Haiti stops. And to give some detail about Royal Caribbean suspends visit to Labadee, Haiti. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. So it looks like they are canceling.
Right. And in the statement from the office of the prime minister, he uses the words, we cannot absorb, right, this many people. I'm going to read from that very quickly. The prime minister says, at the Summit of Americas in June of 2022, which took place in the United States, 21 countries in our hemisphere signed an agreement that included a commitment to receive refugees. I did not sign this pledge, and I continue to believe this is the right decision for our country. We Bahamians are compassionate people, but we simply cannot absorb additional burdens or security risks at home. So that's a plan I've been talking about or been trying to talk about with various local stakeholders for over 2 years, right? It is the America's companion to the UK Rwanda migrant plan. Biden referred to it as the lily pad plan, right? The Biden administration referred to it as the lily pad plan, where 22 countries signed on to be able to use their countries as lily pads, where migrants that are detained at sea can be held until they're processed. We determine the nature, the reason for their travel, and or for the duration of the time is required to return stability to their land of origin, right? And so we can pick up migrants. We don't have to detain them here. There are countries that have signed on to this 2022 Summit of the Americas plan that are being resourced and supported by the other, the more developed countries in the Americas to provide a safe space, humane space for these people. But when we read that the Prime Minister is saying the repatriation of individuals aboard those vessels will be conducted in a manner that prioritizes the safety of our officers and respects the human rights and dignity of the passengers, where are you repatriating them to, sir? Why are you repatriating them to a zone that you yourself and our government, in collaboration with other regional partners, have declared a war zone so that they could go in or declared a war zone and recognize the need for transitional external government?
We don't plan to repatriate them, Aaron. That's just talk. We don't plan to repatriate them. Anyway, it's now 11:59.
Yes, sir.
Thanks very much for entertaining me, Aaron. This has been Guardian Radio, the AM with C.A. Nuri. We'll be back tomorrow to have another lively and provocative conversation, right? I coined that from somebody else. I wonder where I get it from. Anyway, have a wonderful day.
He's a pirate, eh?
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.